You're listening to The Point. The practice of religion in our society appears to be changing. While some individuals continue to identify with a formal religious sect, such as Catholic, Baptist, or Jewish, others are looking for alternative ways to nurture their spirituality. Thomas Moore believes individuals can fashion a religion of their own, whether that is inside or outside a religious practice, and find a sense of purpose that satisfies not only spiritually, but intellectually and emotionally. His book is titled A Religion of One's Own, and he joins us in our Woods Hole studio. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Amanda.
So as you acknowledge in your book, the world is changing very fast. Advances in technology make us able to do things more efficiently. Science is able to explain more of the world around us. So what do you see as the role of religion or spirituality in today's world? And what is your definition of religion?
Well, my definition of religion, let me start with that. Most difficult thing. My definition is that religion is a concrete and creative response to the mysteries that we experience within ourselves and in the world around us. So that's how I understand religion. If you can hear the word that way, it's so hard to get rid of the sense of religion as a body of beliefs and a big organization. But think of it as an experience, something you do in your life. So we have a lot of mysteries, you know, like, why do I get sick? Why have I fallen in love with this person? What happens after death? And what should I do to make my life worth living? What kind of work should I do? These are all mysterious things. So I see religion as a way to deal with those mysteries from a very deep place. And it requires some reflection that you get in the normal religions, mm-hmm. and it requires maybe some wisdom, some good books. Religions always have good books for us, and models and teachers and experiences like being in nature and the arts, that kind of thing.
So do you see religion and spirituality as being the same thing, or are they completely different?
Well, in some ways, they're the same thing. The way I'm describing it now could sound like the same thing, but I wanted to call this a religion of one's own because, first of all, I love the religions of the world. My education is in world religions, and so I love the traditions. I know they have lots of problems, but I love them in themselves and the wisdom and beauty that they have. I mean, think about the great music and all the religions around the world and the architecture and the poetry. It's fantastic. And our answers, our deepest answers, questions rather, have been answered by these religions and many of them. So we don't have to invent all that. But it's time now for a different way of relating to them, I think. And so I want to put the emphasis on being a religious person rather than what do you believe. Yeah.
So you state that a sense of something larger, a somewhere else or something else is necessary for coping with life and mental well-being. What do you say to people who though don't believe in either? Is spirituality still open for them?
Oh, I think so. What I say is that if you study the mystics of the great traditions, whatever they are, Christian mystics, Jewish mystics, mystics of India, I think there's a lot of atheism in all of that. I mean, they're always saying, you know, don't have a fixed idea of what the divine is or God is or something of that sort. Rather, keep working at it your whole life and keep it open. Openness is a very important thing. They sometimes use the word emptiness to mean keep it empty so that you don't make idols of things. So I think an atheist is really aiming in that direction. I mean, it's a funny thing mm-hmm. to say, but I really think they're aiming toward religion in some ways more than the person who is very rigid about religion.
Oh, that's interesting. So you wear many hats. You're a musician, a university professor with a degree, as you mentioned, in religion. You were a monk for 12 years. Can you describe how your experience as a monk influenced your thoughts on spirituality now?
Oh, they really do, because that really impressed me, to be 13 years in a religious order. And it was wonderful. I loved it. I just got to a point where I thought it was time to move on to something else. And I think I understand it, because I moved from that very private world into a more public world with it all. But it still stays with me. And so I think everything I write, even the way I write, I feel like I'm writing as a monk. You know, I've got books around me. I have some quiet. I have a lot of wood in my study. And so I like the persona of the monk, but I still like being in the world. So I'm kind of a monk of the world in a way at this point.
Yeah. You write that pleasure is important for the soul. This is in sharp contrast to many organized religions where suffering and self-deprivation is the way to divinity.
Yes, I think we've made a huge mistake for roughly 2,000 or 3,000 years about that. It's time to give that up. I think that was a philosophy that wasn't essential to the religions, that was current at certain times. You know, it's like some people are much more ascetic, giving up, depriving themselves and others. A lot of people have been raised to think that if they would only try to be virtuous, which means saying no to their desire, that they will be somehow a better person. And I think that's a mistake. And what we can do rather is embrace deep pleasures and be thinking about it. We don't need to have extreme pleasure and just a pleasurable life and hedonism. That's not what I'm recommending. But a more moderate appreciation of the deep pleasures like good food and friends and a nice home to be, at least a home that we like to be in, comfortable, whatever it is. And to be in the world in a way where you're not fighting it all the time and not fighting yourself and judging yourself.
Yeah, it's interesting you say one that's comfortable to you, because that would be different for everybody. For some, but there are some people who, you know, minimalist is comfort for them, and others who, you know, like more things.
Some people like a cabin deep in the woods,
yeah,
and other people
great.
Need something big and yes. long. And
so many people look to organized religion for spirituality, but also for a sense of community. Can we have both a religion of our own and feel part of a spiritual community?
Oh, I think so. The thing is that if you have a religion of your own, understand, I don't mean to build a building like your church. Mm-hmm. I don't mean that. I mean, if you have a religious sensibility, a feeling of the holiness of life to some extent for yourself, you will meet other people. I'm telling you, I meet them all the time now with this book out. People are telling me everywhere I go how important this is to them, because they're already doing it, they mm-hmm. say. They have a religion of their own, and they meet people who have a similar attitude, and they really connect tightly because it's a deeper connection. You've been searching maybe for a long time, and you have found something that works. You've created something for yourself, and you meet other people like that. The community may not be the same as going to the same building once a week, but you are connected more deeply, and I think the meaning of that connection is stronger.
I'm just thinking of the going to the building once a week, where there is that community of consistency and seeing somebody, and you're talking about these other relationships that maybe you meet this person once, but maybe you continue a relationship. I would imagine it's different for all of these different people you come across. Are some situations where you do have a continuing relationship as you would with some of the people you would see every Sunday?
Oh, yes, sure, you would. Well, there are many possibilities. One is that there are just a few rare people that really you can connect with and about this point and at this level. And they may be scattered around the world or around the country. And then there is the more common thing would be that you meet quite a number of people who are experiencing what you are, and you just connect and you remain friends. But another possibility still, as you mentioned at the beginning, I think you can do all this and still be going to church every Sunday or Saturday, whatever your, mm-hmm. temple, whatever, because even then you can develop and you can think for yourself, first of all, and not accept everything that's given to you. And you can do all the practices in your own way, with your own style, and be more engaged in it, more positively engaged. I think the worst thing is to be passive and just take whatever comes along, because then the practice of religion becomes rote. And that's why people, I think, are going away from the churches. They just don't feel the vitality that they really need.
Yeah. People also turn to religion to help them deal with events that they can't understand or deal with rationally. Do we lose out on the comforts of those rituals if we set out in our own religious or spiritual path? Sometimes that ritual is what's comforting in a bad situation.
Well, it's true that you might lose something in the process, but you can gain something. You can have rituals that really speak to you and mean something to you. For example, I think just traveling can become pilgrimage. You can go to certain places that are special to you, or even go on a retreat for yourself. That would be a ritual form. You can make your own little collection of prayers and meditations from all over the world. That's so rich. And you can adopt those for yourself. I mean, take them to your own and make them your own, in your own collection, in a way. I don't mean to just say, let's pick a little bit of from every religion. I understand that people don't want to do that. But you can do it in a way that's intelligent and artful, and you only take what really speaks to you. And that can then become something that is a little more formal than just spirituality. It actually, after time, you develop your own places and practices that are your religion.
You know, when you're talking about taking different things from different religions, as you're saying that, I'm thinking, you know, we have a tendency to look at what's different in all of these religions, when in fact, there are some things that are very similar that we could be looking at as that we all believe.
Absolutely. One of the people I use as a model in this book is Thomas Merton, who was a Catholic monk. Many Catholics would recognize him of a certain age. He was a monk and very intelligent guy. And he spent all of his life learning how to meditate in a Christian monastery. But at the end of his life, he went off to India and other countries, Burma. He died in Thailand. And he studied how the monks over there meditated. And they wanted to learn from him, and he wanted to learn from them. I thought that was a beautiful practice for him at that point in his life.
Yeah, you discuss magic in the book, a subject of which many might shake their heads. Can you explain your definition of magic and why we should be paying attention to it?
Yes, we live in a highly rational world. It's way too rational. It's like we all go around with these big heads, you know, and legs. And the religions have this. I know that some religious people don't like to use the word magic, but that's the one that's been used for centuries and centuries. What it means is that you can be in the world in a way that you don't do everything according to some kind of rule or expectation or scientific method, but you realize that, let's say, using the right words, if you can just find the right words to talk to somebody, you can really affect their lives. Like as a therapist myself, if I can find the right words to say to someone, that can transform a person just in a second, just the right words. That's what I call magic. It's natural because I'm not talking about anything but something ordinary that we can do, but it's not rational. It's something else. And I think in sports you see it too. There are certain people who can do things that are magical.
Yeah. Almost like I'm thinking miracle as you're saying this.
Yeah, it's like a miracle play. Yes, exactly. Well, I think that's magic. It's ordinary, but we ignore it because I don't think we realize that we are trained and educated to be so rationalistic in our approach to things. That's how it fits in with religion. It moves away from that rationalism, which is secular.
So then what are your thoughts on how we find a balance or coexistence between science and religion?
Well, that I don't think it would be too hard. The problem with science, the only problem with with science and religion today is that science is a bit restrictive. Like it wants to explain everything, and it doesn't like religious explanations. Both sides tend to take each other too literally. You know, religion is too literal about its stories, and if it weren't so, if it could see that most religious insights are expressed poetically because they need to be poetry because they're so profound. Science then hears religion making these statements that sound like fact and wants to argue and fight. If scientists understood, were a little more sophisticated, and realized that religious statements are poetic, then I don't think there would be this big debate between them. Science could be a terrific path to a mystical life, toward sensing value in the world, an ethical life, and it could also lead to an experience of nature that is spiritual as well as physical.
Mm. When you talk about it being poetic rather than literal, I'm thinking about there are some people who, when they just take the Bible, for example, they read things and they take these as literal. And of course, there's many interpretations for everything that's written there, who wrote it, why, you know, what the intent was. But there are people who really do take that literally.
Oh, lots and lots of people do that, yes. Uh-huh. But that I think the problem there is that for a lot of us, you know, we were taught religion when we were 7 or 8 years old. And when you become an adult, you really have to move on beyond that. Otherwise, you remain in this childlike approach to religion. And that's where we are, I think, in America. Mm. We have a very childlike understanding of religion. And of course, it's going to rub up against science. But it doesn't have to be that way. If you can be just a little bit more sophisticated about it, if people could be taught more about religion to raise them to a level that is not so young, childlike. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, too. I'm just thinking of some of my own members of my family. And I remember I grew up in the Episcopal Church and my cousin grew up in the Catholic Church. And they were, you know, just very close to each other. And of course, my grandmother, don't you ever set foot in that. I was worried what would happen if I set foot in that Catholic Church. But we were both so curious about what happened in each of our churches. But we were told you're not allowed to go in there.
I know.
And then as you grow up, though, you become more curious about, well, why do you believe this? And what are the differences and what are the things we have in common? So this exploration you're talking about is knowledge.
It is knowledge. And another complexity there that you just brought up is that there is an overlap between the spiritual and the psychological. So there are a lot of our feelings that seem to be spiritual and religious have a lot to do with family feelings and emotion and our relationship to parents and to family. And they get all mixed up then. And sorting that out can be valuable too.
Right. You also discuss dreams in your book. What role do dreams have in spirituality or religion?
Oh, boy, there's so much there. It's hard to say. I'm a therapist, as I said. I work almost 100% with dreams. I have come over the years, I've been doing this for almost 40 years, I have come to the point where I can't talk to somebody as a therapist unless I have a dream from them. Because the dream is almost like an X-ray in medicine. It shows you what you can't see with a visible eye. And even though a person might say, this is what's happening in my life, they tell the story, the dream gives a deeper picture and maybe a different picture of what's going on. So I look at the dream and I talk to the person. It's like being in these two dimensions at once. The dream is expressed in poetic imagery, and we're not used to thinking that way. We think logically. But if we could loosen up a bit, maybe know a little bit more about art and literature, that kind of thing, we'd be more familiar with imagery, and the dreams wouldn't seem so odd, and they really are helpful.
I was like, boy, I have some really wild dreams. My husband's always saying, why do you have these crazy dreams all the time? I don't never have crazy dreams like that. And I said, he said that to me this morning. I said, yes, you do. You just don't remember them.
Yes. Or another way to answer that is that, well, if I have these dreams, I must be a special person, because this is really a form of insight.
Right. Thomas More is the author of several books. His latest is titled A Religion of One's Own, A Guide to Creating a Personal Spirituality in a Secular World. Thanks so much for coming in and talking with us.
Thank you.
Coming up after a short break, the music of Curtis on Tour, classical musicians who are students from the Curtis Institute of Music.